there's a difference in terms of a mistake, the difference in terms of a dog between Karka and Metaltalin. So the Gemara is basing itself on a Mishnah that appears in the fourth card in the second book of Mitzvah, and that's involved, not mistaken. So the Mishnah says that Ein on Ole Kakol, so the Dinim of Ono only apply by Metaltalin, and they don't apply by Kakol. So where is this all coming from? What is Ono? What's this all about? So this is based on a Pasuk in Chumash. The Torah tells us in Parshas Vahar, when you buy something, sell something, so you're not permitted to be ma'ana the other person, you're not permitted to oppress the other person. What does that mean? And this is what the Chazal used the phrase, omno'as mamon. And as mamon means in the realm of buying and selling, so you have to charge the right price. If you overcharge or undercharge, depending on who's getting cheated, so that's what's called omno'as. So the din of omno'as, Mishnah says, only applies to metaphorin, and it doesn't apply to kakos. How do you know it doesn't apply to kakos? Because the Pasuk says, what does miyana misecha mean? So Chazal Adam Asari, it means dagra nikta miyad liyad. It means metaphorin. Things that you buy and sell by handing them over. So hand you over an animal, hand you over a bag of potatoes. That's called miyana misecha. Karka, you don't sell miyad liyad. You don't hand over the karka physically. So it's not included in the parasha of Ono. So ain't Ono because that parasha, those dinim of Ono do not apply. So the Gemara here is basing itself on that Mishnah. Therefore, the Gemara says, when Achim divide up property, so that's like a mechira, because they're selling the portions one to another. So the dinim of Ono do apply. And then the Rebbe Mur, if they're dividing the top, if they're dividing up karka, just as ain't Ono in a regular mechira's karka, so to ain't Ono here as well. So, our sugya delineates a whole series of different categories of ono. There's ono pachos b'shtus, there's ono b'shtus, there's ono yosef b'shtus, and this is also based on the Mishnah in the fourth parak of Mitzvah. But the Mishnah also tells us that there are three distinct categories of ono, that if it's a very, very small amount of ono, we just ignore it. It's over, finished, at least in the other person is Michael, and you don't even have to return it. If it's a significant amount of ono, such as a sixth of the price, so then, we can't just ignore it. On the other hand, it's not significant enough to throw the entire sale into question. The person has to just return the ono and the mecha has kayim. If it's more than a shtur, so then that's such a significant amount of ono that the entire mecha is bottle. I call bottle movement. Those are the three shiurim that appear in the Gemara of Bar Metzia. Chazal is just borrowing those three shiurim. Comes our Gemara. The Gears that we just read, which is Gears' Rashi, and the Gemara drew a distinction between Karka and Metaltalin in the category of Shtus. In the category of exactly a sixth, if you made a mistake, exactly the sixth, where the halacha normally is Mekach Kayim Umasir Ono, it's in that case that the Gemara says, well, Omer Elbe Metaltalin, Vavim Kakoelim. It's in that case that there's a chiluch between Karka and Metaltalin. The simple implication of that statement in the Gemara is that on the higher aspect of Ono, namely the most serious transgression of Ono, the Isra of Ono of more than a shtus, the Imam has ripped the guy off such a significant amount, perhaps there's no chiluk between the Karka and the Talmud. Just from the simple reading of our Gemara, the fact that the Gemara plugged in this chiluk between Karka and the Talmud in the less severe of the cases, you would get the impression that in the more serious case, in the case of Yosef Mishnus, and maybe that also would be that Yesh Ono the Karkos. This impression that one may get from our Gemara, following our Gersa, happens to be Shittas Rashi. Shittas Rashi not only in the Sefer Kedushin, but it's Shittas Rashi in the Fourth Parak. There's a Gemara in the Fourth Parak of Mitzvah, where after the Gemara is the Drasha of Eino Nolot Kakos, Yana Misefa, Tavra Yad, 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 the Gemara raises the following question. Oh, no, Ein Lehem, do we say that there's no no for Karka, about Bittul Mekach Yesh Lehem, or do we say no? Ain't on all the kakos, we ain't little mekach the kakos. What does that mean? What's the shah of the Gemara? So comes Rashi and says, oh no, the phrase oh no, for the Gemara says, ain't on all the kakos. So that means primarily the case of shtus. If you treat the guy exactly on the spot of a sixth, so that halacha of hachzaras oh no, the fact that the mechira is valid, but the oh no has to go back, so that halacha ain't on all the kakos. That's exactly the cost of Okanavira Mishacha, Dov Radikna Miyadi. Well, what about the third category? The case of Vipul Nekach. The case of Ono Yosef Mishtos, where the halacha says that not only there's no nocha about all kinos, but all mechira is null and void. So the Gemara raises a shayla, what's the din? Do we say that just as ain on nocha karkos, ain bitul mekach karkos? Or do we say no? That on nocha ain lehem, about bitul mekach yeshua. What's the latest asafik in the Gemara? What's going on? So Rashi explains on the spot what the asafik of the Gemara is as follows. These two halachas, that if you cheat a person a sixth, so the halacha is lekach kaim or matzio no, and the second halacha, if you cheat a person more than a sixth, then the whole mekach is batel, are these two halachas basically one and the same? Are these just quantitative differences? Namely, there's a parshav on no in the Chumash. Torah says, I'll tell you, ish esachim. So it depends how much cheating you did. If you cheated a guy a little bit, so then the mechira is still valid. You just have to return your no. If you really cheated the guy such a significant amount, so then the entire mechira is valid. But although there are different consequences for your aveir of ono, there are different halachas that will result from based on the degree of ono that you did. Basically, they're both halachas of ono. They're both dinim to have their source in parshas Bahar. That's one way of understanding these two halachas. What do we say now? That these are two fundamentally different halachas. There's a parasha of Ono in the Torah, and then there's a different halach called the Mekach Tos. Mekach Tos means, let's say I sell you a car, and it doesn't have an engine. So what's the halacha? So you have a right to come to Beis Din and demand your money back. And the chir wasn't chal, it was a Mekach Tos. So let's say I sell you a car that has an engine, it has a transmission, it has everything. What's it missing? I don't know, the tape deck's not working or something. So is that a mekach tos? It may not have been very nice of me to do that to you without telling you, but on the other hand, the car is still a functioning car. It means you can have, there's tos in the car. Sometimes you have a tos that's really defined, the very essence of the object. Sometimes you have a kind of tangential type of a tos that the person's not very happy about, but so-called, you can't say that's called a mekach tos. So comes Rash and explains, this is goof of the topic of the Gemara. When I charge somebody such an exorbitant amount of money for something, the car was really worth $500, and I ripped the guy off, and I cheated the guy, and suddenly I was under the impression it was worth $20,000. But do we say that the difference between a $500 car and a $20,000 car? That's a mekach tos. You don't need parshas bahar to tell me that mechira is bekela. That's a svar pshuta. You don't need a pasuk chumash to say v'da b'shem moshe lemar that you're not allowed to sell a guy a car without an engine. That's pasuk. You're not allowed to do that because that's mamsh outright gineva. That's a tos. That's a mekach tos. So do we say that when a person makes a mistake of such a significant amount that it's more than a shtus of what the value was, that's not a halacha of mekach tos on the off. That's not parshas bahar speaking to that tos. That's the dinim of mekach tos speaking to us. That's a svar pshuta of mekach tos speaking to us. Or should we say no? That when do we apply the principle of mekach tos? That's when there's some change in the cheftza. When the car doesn't have an engine, or I sell you wine, the wine is vinegar, the wine is spoiled. That's called the mekach tos. But when I'm selling you the object that I told you I'm selling you, it's just a change in the value. It's just I cheated you, I ripped you off in terms of the value. That's not called the mekach tos. That's called the kosel mekach. So that's the lomdish shayla that the Gemara is raising. What's the relationship between the din of a tos and a shtus and the din of a tos and a yais and a shtus? Are these both basically the same parasha? They're both hilchos ono. It's just a quantitative difference. What do we say though? That's a qualitative difference. So these are two basically different halachas. One is hilchos ono and one is hilchos mekach tos. Nafka mina to this lomdish shayla. Nafka mina is what about those types of objects that are not subject to Hilchos Ono? For example, Karkos. So anything that's learned out from Parshas Ono does not, by definition, apply to Karkos, because the Gzeres HaKos is Oikon Omiyad Amisecha. So comes Rashi and says, that's good for the suffering of the Gemara. If you hold that the Tos of Yosef Mishtos is a Hilchos Ono, Dikadin, so then Ein Ono the Karkos and Ein Bittul Mekach the Karkos. If you hold that the nature of the Din of Bittul Mekach of Yosef Mishtos is a Mekach Tos type of halacha, so then the Mekach Tos applies to Kach. Let's say I sell you a piece of land and something so fundamentally flawed with this land that it can't function, can't plant on it or something, so that's called the Mekach Tos. So then the dinim of Mekach Tos apply to Kach. So the dinim of Bittul Mekach of Yosef Mishtos would apply to Kach as well. That's the lumdish style the Gemara is raising according to Rashi's understanding of Metzia. What's the Gemara's conclusion? Oh no, ein lehem bitul nekech yesh lehem. According to Rashi, the maskaras of Gemara is that Yosef Ishtus is bitul nekech. There is bitul nekech for Kaka. So Rashi, the Shittos of the conclusion, the Gemara works out beautifully here. The Gemara reads like a charm. That it was Davka on the case of Shtus. Of Shtus Khan of Achsir, oh no, that the Gemara made that statement, the Omen Elabim Metalklin, Aval the Karkos, in another Karkos. And the Gemara did not make that statement, that condition, that Chilak distinction between Karka Metalklin by Yosef and Shtus, because it wouldn't be true by Yosef and Shtus. Because Yosef and Shtus, the halacha is that Yesh Bittul Mechav the Karkos. So according to Rashi, the gears in the Gemara condition that the Beis and the Beis is Mamash Lishitasoi in Bav Mitzi in the fourth paragraph. Everything reads beautifully. Comes Tosfos and asks you, the old Tosfos, and says, it's all nice and dandy, but it's against the Gemara. It's against the Gemara at the very end of Masechus Bav Mitzi, where the Gemara says that if you cheat somebody and you sell them $100 land for $200 and vice versa, so ain't no other kakos. So comes Tosfos and says, you see, you cheated the guy way more than a sixth. But the Gemara still says, that ain't another karkos. So you see that Rashi's lumdus is very nice, but the mice it's wrong. That's not what the Gemara meant. When it said yesh pitul mekach lekarka in the fourth paragraph of Mesiyah, it wasn't talking about cheating more than a sixth. It must have meant something different. What would Rashi respond? So of course Rashi would have to respond, but it's not like it's a sugya. There's no other way to resolve Shittus Rashi. Because Mamash Plakman by Gemara at the end of Mesiyah that says ain't another karkos even more than a shtus. But there's a Gemara at the beginning of the Mesiyah, in the fourth paragraph, that says that ain't no karkos by yesh bitul mekach. And Rashi understood that bitul mekach meant more than a shtus. So al korach it's a steer in Gemara's. So yom hakasim ha-shalishi according to Rashi, the Gemara tradition. So two out of three Gemara's that seem to support this idea that bitul mekach on yosef shtus yesh the karka. So according to Rashi, there's no way to solve the problem. This is steer in sugis. It's not like it's a marayim. And not the end of the world. Rashi paskins that oh no, ain't no bitul mekach yeshlo. So this is shtus Rashi.
Which Gemara is the steer of Rashi?
The Gemara at the end of Bamitsiya says that Zom and Shabbat may have a Mosan is ain't another Kakos. The Tosas didn't want to make it to a steer. So here's Tosas wanted everything to be the same. Tosas thought that the Gemara at the end of Bamitsiya it says if you sell 100 to 200, that's not a no. The Tosas says that that's the Gemara that carries it. That's the Gemara. So what do you do with the Gemara of Bamitsiya in the fourth parak? What's going on? What do you do with the Gemara condition of that for days? So the Gemara condition of Mbeis is not a problem. In one fell swoop, Tosfos changed the Girsa. And Tosfos said that phrase of the Gemara, that condition of Omer Elbe Metalkle of the Karkos, in another Karkos, that statement was going on the last statement, the Yosef of Shtus. Not the case of Shtus itself. Tosfos reread the entire Sugi here. So Tosfos has no problem changing, just cross that line and put it in the next line of the Gemara. That's not a problem. What do you do with the Sugi in Bavitsi in the fourth paragraph? So the Gemara says, I'm not a little bit of what do the words mean? What's the touch? What does this little mechatation have? So it comes close to him, dug up the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that it's true that ain't a nolika calls. And says Yerushalmi, even if you cheat the guy more than a sixth, and even more than a fifth, and more than a fourth, and more than a third, you really rip the guy off pretty bad. Ain't a nolika calls. But at some point, Yerushalmi says, you reach the point where you say, this is mechatos already. This is not a no. Now, it's the same lumdus as Rashi. The other thing is that Rashi reached that point. At what point? At the point of more than a sixth. Whereas Yerushalmi says, no. More than a sixth, that's still called the Chasano. You need the Chiddush HaTorah Pashut Vahar to disqualify that Mechira. So at what point do you say that it's Bitul Mekach? At what point do you say that it's a Mekach Tos? If you charge the guy twice the price, if the car's worth $500, charge the guy $1,000, that's already crazy. You can't say anymore, that's just a little bit of a mistake. Bein Yabin Chamani, that's already a different object. That's already such a far-reaching error, that's already the Klal Mekach Tos. So it's the same lumdus as Rashi, that there's a certain point that you say that a mistaken price is no longer Ono, but rather it's a Mekach Tos, whereas Rashi put that point much, much lower on the spectrum at the point of a sixth, more than a sixth, so the Yerushalmi says, you only need double the price. So it tells us that that's what the Gemara means in the fourth paragraph of Metziah, that means sometimes bitul mekach yesh lahem. Sometimes every once in a while, it's such an unbelievable mistake. Then bitul mekach yesh lahem. But just a sixth, more than a sixth, that's still called a no, and in another kakos. Of course, Tosfos has a little bit of a tightrope walking to do, because the one Gemara that pushed Tosfos into the corner, that ain't another kakos, that is the Gemara of Metzia, which is 100 for 200, which simple math tells us, you know, Sassins tells us that's double. So if anything, that should have been the example where Yesh, in effect, did the Mekech Lekakos. So Tel says, nah, the Gemara didn't really mean 100 for 200, it meant 100 for 199, or it meant 101 for 200. The Gemara was just talking, you know, just emphasizing that even if you make a really big mistake, add another Kakos. The Gemara didn't mean really honest to goodness 100 for 200. We could see it would have been 100 for 200. So Tachar Yerushalmi says that there would have been Bittul Mekech B'chi Hagatna. Again, here we get into the Malachi, but you can already see there's already something weak. The weak spot of this pshat is that there are two weak spots in this pshat. Weak spot number one is that Lamani says the Gemara does say 100 for 200, and number two, the Gemara in the fourth parak, the Bar Metzia, when it says on Noa Ein Lahem Bittul Mekech Yesh Lahem, how in the world does the Gemara expect us to know and what shear is Bittul Mekech? According to Rashi, so we know the phrase Bittul Mekech already. We learned that fourth parak of Metzia. You're already up to Daf and Zayin and the Sugi Vein and other Kakos. So you've already been learning through the Sugis of Omnoah for the five block before. So you know what the term Bittul Mekech means. So you know Bittul Mekech cannot mean Yosef Mishtus. So the Gemara says Omnoah Ein Lahem Bittul Mekech Yesh Lahem. You know exactly what that term means. But according to Tosfos, that the Gemara is not referring to the known, the pre-known Bittul Mekech of Mordechai Mishtus. The Gemara is talking about some Yerushalmi tucked away somewhere in Yerushalayim about double the price. Yerushalmi, just kidding, wasn't in Yerushalayim. But the Yerushalmi somewhere about double the price, and there's no statement in the Bavli throughout the entire Bavli. There is no remez of this shear of twice the price. If anything, there's a Gemara later on, but we see the contradicts there. So how can the Gemara just pull off this stump and say, I'm not in the middle of Mekah, and expect us to know what the Gemara is talking about? The Gemara should have said, Hazim the Mayaskita, Bittul Mekech, the Yosem 100% or something. So it's a difficult pshat, Tosis pshat. The mile of Tosis pshat is that you don't have to throw out any Gemaras. According to Rashi, the weak point is you have to throw out the Gemara at the end of Mitzvah. According to Tosis, you could save all the Gemaras. You know, the thing is that the Gemara of the fourth parak is Iki Chasim and Sefer never bothered to define for us what Bittul Mekech Yesh Lahem, let it up to our imagination or to our pre-knowledge of some phantom Yerushalmi that the Gemara never really spoke about in the Bible. So that's a little bit of a weak point of Tosis Pshat. Whenever you have a shy like this, we have a seemingly contradiction in Sugyas, and you have two different Rishonim giving you a different Pshat, but each one seems to be problematic, you can accept that you're already a third Pshat. So the third Pshat is clearly the Rambam's Pshat, which is really based on the Rif. The Rif and the Rambam are of the opinion that there is no Onoah for Karka whatsoever. Not only is there no Onoah for Karka, there is no Bittul Mekech for Karka, there is nothing, there is no point that you say that, well, I ripped the guy off, so it's a Mekech Tos. Absolutely not. Karka, by definition, has no specific value. Karka, as such, can be whatever price tag you put on Karka, so that Api Aloch could still be labeled as the price tag. You can't say Mekech Tos. If I cheat the guy in terms of the quality of the Karka, well, let's say the amount of the Karka, the Gemara says, if I tell a guy I'm selling him 10 acres, and I sell him 5 acres, I sell him 9 acres, so even though it's a less than a Shtus difference, that's a mistake in terms of the quality. That's a mistake in terms of the essence of the karka. But a mistake in terms of the price of the karka, as the Rif and the Rambam hold, there's no market value you could put to karka. It may theoretically be on the market, this house could theoretically be on the market for $300,000, but there's always someone who's willing to pay $700,000. All right, you see it all the time. So real estate, by its very definition, the halacha doesn't put a price tag in the sense of saying that after you've reached this point, it's considered to be a Mekech Tos. That's how the Rif and the Rambam learn. So therefore, the Rif and the Rambam learn to pshuto the Gemara at the end of Bava Metzia, Me'a B'Masa, even 100 to 200, or for that matter, even 100 for 2 million, ain't another Mekech Tos. What's the problem according to the Rif and the Rambam? The Gemara of the fourth parak of Bava Metzia. What does the Gemara mean when it says, Ono Ein Lahem, about Bittul Mekech Yesh Lahem? At what point do we say that it's Bittul Mekech? The answer is, the Rish and the Rambam hold that Gemara was rejected. It is a Machlokes HaSugyos, the same way Rashi said it's a Machlokes HaSugyos, but whereas Rashi opted for the Gemara in the fourth prayer and threw up the Gemara in the ninth prayer, the Rish and the Rambam opted for the Gemara in the ninth prayer and threw up the Gemara in the fourth prayer. But the Gemara, the way the Rish and the Rambam read the Gemara in the fourth prayer, that was one Amayer who said it. But we don't pass it like that. We pass it like the Stam Gemara in the ninth prayer, that Ein Bittul Mekech Legamre, Legamre, Legamre. So three different sheetahs in the Gedolei Rishonim. What's the story of Omnoah Bekarka? regular dinner before Nar Makaka there isn't? Is there any point that you say Bittul Mecca? So Rashi says yes. At the point of Shtos, that's called, at the point of Gelsim Shtos, that's called Bittul Mecca. According to Tosfos, that's only at the point of 100% mistake, that's called Bittul Mecca. According to the Rif and Ram, there's no point when we say
that. How
did
the Rif and Ram learn that
there's no mekatos in the price of this karka. That's the zeres hakos of kanami aramisecha. That's exactly the Torah telling me. The nature of the zeres hakos of kanami aramisecha is telling me that the Torah doesn't give a price to every karka. There's no such thing as a price to every karka. And the other Rishonim are learning, that's not the Torah saying there's no price to every karka. The Torah is saying the chiddush, according to Rashi, the chiddush of Torah, of Parshas Bahar, doesn't apply to karka. The mistake of a mere shtus. Well, not the Parshat Bahar, I never would have said there's an interval of Shtus. I would have said, it's only Shtus, what's the big deal? So that Chiddush of Torah of Shtus, that Chiddush was only said by Metal, it wasn't said by Karka. According to the Rambam, the Gemara, the Pasuk is saying much more than that. The Pasuk is telling me that there's no such thing as a price name by Karka Bechor.
I understand the difference in the Rambam. I mean, the Mechuk is, I thought the
Mechuk
is only in the
Mishkos of
the Karka.
Yeah, the Mishkos, everyone agrees that there's a Mechuk Tos. We're talking about mistakes and prices. Mistakes in measuring, everybody agrees is a mechach tos. That's what they're talking about. Need the mishka of a minyan, I feel the pachach tos.
But when
we see
about
Be'eluye,
I thought the Gemara was saying that obviously that there is a kimeh b'chtavu, or that there is a no, to be
able to buy Be'eluye. So, always. No. Look, Gemara said when you make a mistake in measuring, so for sure there's a, for sure there's a mechach tos, for sure the whole thing is wrong. You make a mistake in pricing, so ain't no liquor close. So according to Rashi, that means if you made a mistake exactly of the shtos, according to Tosfos, that means if you made a mistake anywhere up to a half, and according to the Rif and Ram, if you made any mistake whatsoever. Okay? This is what Chalekis have been showing me about how to learn Rishon and ain't no liquor close. So ain't no liquor close meaning that Mamishka Halacha said that every piece of karka is theoretically worth the world, or does that Halacha also accept that there's a certain point, a certain cutoff point, the value of karka, it's just that the cutoff point is different than the pound one. This machlok is, in a sense, it's really Rashi and Tosfos against the Rambam. Rashi and Tosfos are similar to one another in that there is a cutoff point. Against the Rif and the Rambam, only no cutoff point. So this led to another machlok in the Rishon. Now the Rishon is Sukkah in the fourth paragraph of the Sefer Gittin. Put on another cutoff point. Can I do that? Is that possible? Is it possible at all? No, okay. There's a halacha. Parshas Ve'eh, you should be kisksafim. We spoke about this in the past. There's a din that if I borrow money from you, so when the Shnas HaShemitah comes, the end of the Shnas HaShemitah comes, so we generally use the halacha, most of the Shem assume, when the end of the Shnas HaShemitah comes, so then the loan is going to be canceled. The only thing is, the Torah gives you a few different answers about how to get around that problem. How can you circumvent, in a sense, HaShemitah's kisksafim? So the few aids that the Torah gives of the circumventing Shemitah's Ksafim, one of those aids is what's called Moses Shnarets of Beisdin. It lets you take your document and you hand it over to Beisdin, and he says, I'm not going to collect this chayim. You Beisdin, you do the chayim. You collect the chayim of the Shemitah. So the Gemara says, that's okay. That can, in effect, override the Dinah Shemitah's Ksafim. Because the Torah says, well, you guys is Israel, yes, Achim, that a person himself is not allowed to be no gates. But if he hands it over to Beisdin, so Moses Shnarets of Beisdin, so they can go ahead and collect the chayim of his behalf. So that's a din of HaTorah. So comes the Mishnah in the Sechas Shviz, it says that Hillel instituted a din of the Rabbanon, which is similar to some degree, a little bit like Moshe Shteros and Lebezin, but not quite the same thing. Moshe Shteros and Lebezin means that Mamash take the Shteros and he hand him over to the Bezin. Hillel instituted what's called Prisbal. Prisbal just means that the person doesn't really hand over the Shteros to the Bezin, but he writes an additional Shtar saying that I'm hereby, in a sense, handing over the Chavis to the Bezin. Tachlis, who's going to do the Negisa? Who's going to go and do the collecting after Shemitah? The guy himself is going to do it. So that's not a real Moshe Shteros of the day. That's what most of the Rishonim write. And Prusbul is only a Dimitri Rabbanon. That's what the simple reading of the Gemara in the fourth paragraph of Gittin is. The Minah Torah, this is not Moshe Shteros of the day. Rashi is a Rashi in Machlis that seems to say that Prusbul works because it's Mamash and Moshe Shteros of the day. Which is a Talmudic Rashi, because the Gemara doesn't sound like it. The Pasha Tzad, the Gemara in the fourth paragraph of Gittin, that's what involved is that Midah Raisha, it's only called Moshe Shteros of the day, when you Mamash do it. The fact that you just write a make-believe hocus-pocus star saying that either I'm handing over the shtaros, but then we all know who's going to do the nekisa. So that doesn't work in that Torah. That only works in the Dirabbana. That's what the Gemara has a whole discussion before the Yom Kippur. So the Gemara in the fourth part of Gittin has a whole shot of Hapen Hillel Mikvus Takana. Within our Torah, so Shemitah Sassafim kicks in, so Hapen Hillel be Misakein, there's no Shemitah Sassafim. Hillel has the right to be Oikei Dovim in HaTorah, you tell him. Hillel has the right to tell us to violate something that says in the Chumash. The Torah says, Lo Yigai Sassari Yisrael, you're not allowed him. So Hapen Hillel go ahead and tell us that we are allowed to go, we're allowed to go and collect the Chay. Bezin doesn't have a right to Oikei Dovim in HaTorah, but Kumba said, Bezin can't tell you not to blow shofar in Shabbos. Bezin can tell you not to shake a lulav in Shabbos, because that's sheva al pasir, that's passive. But to tell you actively to do an aveira, the Bezin does not have the craft, he doesn't have the authority to do. So how does Bezin have the authority to institute the concept of prusbul, which will in effect, now we're all here forever guys, that's it. How does Bezin have the authority to tell you to violate something b'kum ba'asei against what says the Chumash? That's the Gemara Gittin, the fourth part of Kasha. So the Takon of Hillel, his Takon of Prusbel, so the Gemara's bottom of this Kasha. It seems to be a curious document of terror. Hillel was like the model at the one time in Jewish history for people who decide that they're going to change all the Dini HaTorah. So they say, what do you mean we're changing Dini HaTorah? We're following the footsteps of Rabbi Hillel from the first century. He changed Judaism, so we're going to change Judaism. After all, why did Hillel change Judaism? Why did he use the Prusbel? Because he saw that people weren't lending money. People were afraid they weren't going to get their money back. People stopped lending money. The Torah says, now I do that. The Torah says, Yishava, pen yet dub of Bavafa, bu yal neymar. You're not allowed to refrain from lending money because of the Shnasa Shmita. So Hillel responded to a socio-economic crisis in the Jewish society in the first century by changing the rules of the Torah. So therefore, that's the way to go. That's that role model. This is a quote that Hillel was the first changer of the halacha. So anyone who reads the Gemara in the fourth book of Gittin will realize immediately that that's not exactly going on. That Chazal already hundreds of years, thousands of years ago already were bothered with this kasha. How you talk? And how could Hillel talk of change, quote unquote, change the halacha? So the Gemara has a machlokes. What exactly took place? What exactly did Hillel institute? So one day the Gemara says that Abaye says that Hillel only changed. That he only instituted Prusbel because Shemitah's Kesafim is man as that's only Medin Rabbanon. That if the dinner Shemitah's Kesafim would have been the Raisa as man as that, so Hillel would have had no Kayach to institute Prusbel. You can't change the halacha. But the Torah says, well, you go, so Hillel can't make hocus pocus and tell you that it's mukkah to be no gaze. So the whole Takanas Hillel was only predicated on the assumption that Shemitah's Kesafim, hachal mika kol is on Medin Rabbanon. Why is there no Shemitah's Kesafim as man as that? Because there's no Yaribul Bismanazer, there's no Shemitah's Harakamash Bismanazer. So Hillel was going to Ikvais, those Panoi, those Shitas, that held at the Chlap. The whole institution of Shemitah's Tzafim Bismanazer is only Midirabonim. So good, the Harry Abana Mikdash, while Shemitah's Tzafim Diarabisah. So the Prusbels will go by the way, so that's according to Abai. And Rava says, no, Rava says that even if Shemitah's Tzafim Bismanazer is Diarabisah, Hillel could still institute the Prusbel. Why is that? Because Hefke based in Hefke. In the realm of Dine Mominis, so Beidin has a free hand, even Lach or Dovim in HaTorah. It's based on special Pesukim, by the way. So Pesukim, the concept of Hefke Beidin Hefke. So basically what Beidin did was, in the Torah says the loan is canceled. Comes the end of the Shnas HaShmita, the loan is canceled. And what did the Hefke Beidin Hefke do? They said, if you wrote a principle, so we're going to give you the loan back. We're going to be remarked at the Chay back to you. Midar Aisa, you don't have a right to collect it. You go ahead and collect it, you're a Gana in HaTorah. Now with the Rabbonim, we're going to institute that the guy does owe you money, and you do have a right to go collect it against. Hefker based in Hefker, in effect, overrides the problem of Einkrach Biyach HaChavar, Lachadav Minatar, Pekum Basay, in the realm of Dine Mamadis. But they've already worked on this problem. This is part of our Anabom theory that we spoke about in the past, that the socioeconomic reason behind instituting Prusbel was the fact that there was a problem in the economy, that people weren't lending money to one another, it was very bad for the Emir. And now the solution to the problem wasn't just to say, well, there's a problem in the economy, therefore we'll change the halacha. No, the solution was, you have to find some kind of a locking mechanism, you have to discover the formula for how the animal works to figure out how this is going to work. So according to Abaye, the formula was, well, it's only the Rabbanim anyway, so by the Rabbanim, we can do whatever we want. Or, even if it's Beraisa, according to the Rabbanim, it'll still work because of Hefkebe, because of the pre-existing halacha principle of Hefkebe and Hefkebe. So let me slice it. This is a bit of Prusbel. We practiced Prusbel out of Yemizet. When did we have Prusbel? How many years ago?
No, it's been 4 years ago. 4 years ago.
Somebody called me up a year after the Shemitah, not the end of the Shemitah, but Mamash, the end of the 8th year, going in the 9th year. He called me up Erev Rosh Hashanah and wanted to write a Prizmal. I said, why do you want to write a Prizmal? It was 6 more years. They said, no, they thought that every Erev Rosh Hashanah, so you have to write it. They didn't know that it was once every 7 years. They remember the year before that they wrote a Prizmal, so they thought it was every year. They thought they had just forgotten the other 30 years before that. They thought that every year, Erev Rosh Hashanah, it's like Hathoras Nadav, you write a Prizmal. He said, no, it's only once every 7 years. So the Gemara says that Mishnah says that in Masechta Shviyah is that there's one cash for writing a Prizbul, but the Loida has to own karka. So the Loida doesn't own karka, so then the whole Prizbul is bottled and bottled. Now, why does the Loida have to own karka? So we shouldn't give two reasons why. So some Mishnah say, if a Loida doesn't own karka, Milsa Flashchicha, who would ever lend money to a Loida that doesn't own karka? So Milsa Flashchicha, but that's very wrong. Come never gets to do the things from the Shin of any cases. So therefore, when they formulated the Takana Prizbul, so they formulated it that the Loida has to own the karka. Mishnah give other reasons, but whatever it is, that's the first Mishnah, that the Loida must own karka. How much karka must the Loida own? So he doesn't have to own all that much. The Mishnah is a culture. He's the smallest amount of karka, and that's okay. That's what the Mishnah says. Let's say the Loida Taka doesn't own karka. So then the Mishnah says the following is the exact karka to the Loida. So we can do a Zach Mishnah Lefana, which is a little bit of a strange thing, because how is that supposed exactly? Because if he won't get the karka, so then he won't be able to, the Mav won't be able to write a Prozbol, and then Takana loan is going to be cancelled. So that's what the Rishon, the Rav, getting his bother. So how is that if the Mav is going to give him karka? So the Rav quotes one of the Rishon who says that no, the giving of the karka itself is a schus. The fact that there are going to be negative repercussions down the line is going to cost him his $10 million loan that is still going to be intact because the Prozbol is going to be chal. So that's a technical thing. That's not the Etzem HaMatana. The Etzem HaMatana is really a good thing. That's one day in the Ran. The other day in the Ran said, Menina Chinami, that Menina Torah, this Zechiyah doesn't work. That I can't give a guy a piece of karka, even though Ba'asheh Husham, it's a good thing to get karka, but it's going to cost them down the line. That's not called a Zechus. So it really wouldn't work. This is Mikulei Prizbul Shonokan. If it's Prizbul, so let me say, Rabbanah, the Chavim may believe this is also good enough. They're the ones who require the life of that karka. So they said you can give this hocus pocus karka to them also, even though really Nikula did. It's not really his. So whatever it is, this is the din. When you write a Prizbul, so you have to mezak a little bit of karka to the Loida. So I remember when I was in high school, so first Shemitah when I was in high school, so they wanted to teach us a little bit about Shemitah Sofim. So we told us about Prizbuls, 50 days before Rosh Hashanah. So everybody was writing Prizbuls back and forth to each other, Gevaldik. So some of them were Irish at the time, but this is like Thomas, because even if this was like, I borrowed a dollar from you and I want to write a Prizbul for it, but we were all kids. We were 14-year-old kids. Nobody had any karka. So how could we? When are we going to be mezaki the karka? The Malva didn't have karka either. So let's say I lent the guy a quarter for make a telephone call. I ever shut up. So I want to be able, after Rosh Hashanah, to get the quarter back. So I have to have a Prizbul. But I don't have karka. He doesn't have karka. No one has karka. So how could you have any do this? So what's shayach to write a Prizbul? So remember at the time we were trying to find the Eitzah. How is everybody going to get karka? Normally, at least, if the Loida doesn't have, at least the Malva has. Somebody has karka. How are you going to do it? So I remember the time, so when I went to high school, so it was in Riverdale, Rabbi Riskin was the head of the high school at the time. So it was Or Torah in its the old days, and it was still a high school in Riverdale. And Rabbi Sachs was there at the time, Nachum Siegel was there at the time, the old times. So they're kind of trying to come with the name, so how are you going to be mocked in all these 14-year-old kids, Kaka? So Rabbi Riskin had a great idea. At the time, they were just laid the cornerstone for a new community in Eretz Israel called Ephrat. Just the start, this was 1980 or so, give or take, around then. So I have a risk at home somewhere, and then Ephrat, we owned the whole Ephrat at the time, I don't know. So he went ahead and he did a king and Suda with each of the Bachman and Yeshiva. He was marked a small chelek of Ephrat, each person, I don't know where it is, but each person, the Gemara says, you don't have to tell you where it is. It's not kosher, it's in the northwest corner of Ephrat somewhere. Each person has a half an inch by half an inch of karka. So that's enough to write first before. That's the bit. So the Rishonim replied to the Kasha, what kind of game is this that you can write a Prozbul if the Loiva owns just a marshal of Karka? Why doesn't the Karka have to at least correspond to the value of what the Chayv is? I mean, the whole idea of Karka is that not a normal Chayv. I would never lend you $1,000 unless I knew you had Karka to back it up with. So the Chayv, the Takaras HaChayv should have been that you have to have $1,000 worth of Karka. Would I ever lend you $10 million if I knew that you had a quarter of a land in Ephrat that's worth, maybe it's not worth $10 million, but would I ever lend you $10 million if I thought all you had was a mashu that was worth 29 cents? I would never lend you money based on that. So how in the world are we fulfilling this Takanas HaChomer of the Loba own karka? It just says a mashu shel mashu, two by nothing piece of karka. So how can it be? How can the Gemara say to Feirish that even if you just have a mali macha, if you just have a needle's worth of karka, that's good enough for Takanas principle? It doesn't make any sense. So the Rashbam is quoted by Tosfos in Gittin, in Daf Lamed Vav, I'm not mistaken, where the Rashbam says, no, the reason why the Chum were able to formulate this takana, even a shav and mashin, a shav of character is good enough for a principle for chavis that are worth billions of dollars, says the Rashbam, ain't on all the kakos. What does that mean? What does ain't on all the kakos? Well, Dorgi Shemitah's suffering, what does that have to do with it? So the Rashbam understood, what's the nature of the din of ain't on all the kakos? That there's no price tag on character. It means, you think it's something worth 29 cents, it means, the real estate agents are sizing up this piece of land as being worth 29 cents. It's not true. This piece of land is priceless. It could be worth $10 billion. Also, it could be worth 29 cents. The Torah doesn't put a shavius on karka. That's the din. That's the halachic statement of in another kakal. So there's no shavius, there's no price there on karka. It's worth whatever you want to call it. You want to call it 29 cents, you want to call it $10 billion. There's no difference in halacha. So the Rashbam invokes the principle of ein onor kakos to explain away how the Chum were able to formulate the halacha of Prusbul, and even a mashal of character is sufficient to write a Prusbul on. So Tosis quotes this Rashbam and says that it's not true. Tosis will shikos and reject the Rashbam and say as follows. If you would hold like the riff in the Rambam, that ein onor kakos really means it, this is no cutoff point, this is no onor ever on karka. So top of the Rashbam's probably makes sense. Says Tosis, we all know that we're right, that the Yerushalmi is right, the Gemaraj does speak about Bikul Mekach Yesh L'Karka. That must mean like Yerushalmi says more than twice the price. So then you can't invoke in and other kakos to tell me that there's no price taken in karka. It's not true. There is a price taken in karka. There's more than twice the price. That's out of the realm of the Shabbos of the karka. So how could the Mishnah give the Mishnah and Shavuot say you could write a prosbo for a $10 million chayv if you have a piece of karka that's worth a nickel? Go try to sell the nickel karka for $10 million. The lach will be bitul mekach yesh lehem. So Taisa says a karka that's not the pshat, that's not the geder hadin, that the 5 cent piece of karka can count to the $10 million chayv. That cannot be related. That cannot be a corollary of the halach of ein onor kakos. That would only be a corollary of ein onor kakos if you go with the rishon from the Rambam's understanding of ein onor kakos. But our understanding of ein onor kakos doesn't lend itself to this shot of the Rashbam. So, Dabba, what is the correct answer to this question? Why is it you could use a 5 cent piece of karka to be given a chayv of $10 million? So it tells us, if you think about it hard enough, long enough, use your imagination, the 5 cent piece of karka really could end up turning into a $10 million piece of karka. How in the world could that happen? What would that halacha be as follows? Let's say you owe me $10 million, and all you have is a nickel worth of karka. So I go ahead and I come to you and I say, listen, you gotta collect my chayv, you owe me $10 million. Sorry, all I have is 5 cents worth of karka. I say, all right, at least I'll take those 5 cents. So I take the piece of karka. So now how much money do you owe me? You owe me $10 million minus 5 cents. Now, let's say you get a couple of pennies together, and you say to me, you want to be paid that piece of karka. The thing is that if I collect karka from the lova, and now he comes back to me a month later and says, listen, I want my karka back, and here's the money of the shavuos of the karka, he can do that. He can force me to, it's what's called tshuva hadol yodom. He can force me to take the money, and he gets his land back again. So let's say you come back to me a week later and says, guess what, I just won the lottery and I got a nickel now. So here's the nickel, and I want my karka back. I said, okay, fine. No problem. So I give you back the karka, and then I take the nickel, and I say to you, guess what? I have a chum against you that says $10 million minus a nickel, that means you still owe me $9.99995 worth of karka, of a chum. Oh, you have a nickel karka? I like that nickel. I like that piece of karka back again. So fine, you give me back the karka, then we take a little 10, and we cross out, and now we're down to $9.99990 worth of a chum. And then you hit the jackpot again, you get another nickel back, and you come back and you demand your piece of karka back. You're very, very close to this karka. You have a very, very, sentimental meaning to this piece of land in Ephrat. So you ask for the nickel of karka back, and I say, okay, good. Now I got 10 cents in my pocket. You have your piece of karka back again, and this keeps on going. Ad biyazgoyel. In theory, if you have enough patience, so then I could end up being goyga $10 million chayv out of a 5 cent piece of karka. This is what's called Ketfila Diabayi. You want to study about this in Ksubas. That's the Chiddush of the Sugya of Ketfila Diabayi. You can pull off the stump. But you can mamash pull off the stump and keep on being going there. So it comes to us and says, since theoretically any piece of karaka can theoretically be used to collect any amount of chay, if you just keep on doing it enough times, so therefore when the chum of formula made a prusbol, they said that's good enough. It's, again, all prusbols are abundant, the whole thing is in the Eilim Masal Yoyim anyway. It doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be reality that this is really going to happen, so this could happen, that's good enough to fulfill this din of the Leiva Oni Taka. So whereas the Rashbam explained away the formulation of the Takrana of the Leiva Oni Taka is related to Eina Melech HaKos, Tosis didn't buy into that, because Tosis held the Eina Melech HaKos Yesh Gevul HaKavar. So Tosis said it's based on a different Allah, it's based on this concept of the Tzina Diabayi. You can constantly re-dive and re-dive and re-dive the same karka until it eventually reaches 10 million miles. So bottom line is we know that the Ein Olah Kikos. Some point is Ein Olah Kikos, some point is point the Sabishan, there is quasi on the Opet Lumecha, but the Rishon Rambam never is. We have to read the following. We speak about Onoah. So clearly there are two Olahs of Onoah. There's a violation of Onoah. There's a prohibition, it's an Isser Deraisa to be Ma'aris about it. If I go ahead and I sell you something, I sell you a car for the wrong price, I violated the Isser Deraisa of Altomo Isha Sochid, whether I get caught by the Eidr or not, whether I end up getting away with it, that's irrelevant. Of a Shemai, I violated the Isser Deraisa of Altomo Isha Sochid. But there's a second bit of Onoah. That's the din of Chazor Asom. The fact that there are consequences in Dinin Mominus, the consequences in Deiz and Shomata for violating Onoah. What are the consequences? It depends. If it's only a shtuf, so then I get to keep the object, but I have to return the extra money. If it's more than a shtuf, then the whole mechira is bottle. There are halakas that follow the Isser of Onoah. So there are two different parashas of Onoah. The same parasha, two different than with Onoah. Isser Onoah. The very point of the Beir of Onoah. And then, the second aspect of Onoah is the Havzaras of Onoah. There are repercussions of Onoah, consequences of Onoah.
When the Mars is publicly supposed to be any different, I mean, there's no Isser.
Oh, we'll get to it. Hold on. So when we say Ein Onoah Lekat Kos, what does that mean? Does Chazal mean that I'm a lot of cheer guy when I sell a car? Because I'm selling you a house. And I know full well that the market value of this house is $100,000. I am allowed to go ahead and sell to you for $150,000. You don't know anything. You just came from China. You don't know anything about, you don't know what's doing about buying houses in Phoenix. You don't know anything. So you think, if I tell you it's worth $150,000, that you're a religious guy, an honest-looking guy, some of that's what it's worth. So I go ahead and I rip you off $50,000. Okay. You're going to come to take me to Beis Din now. So according to most terms, let's say according to Rashi. According to Rashi, Sotapa would be little mecca. But leaving Rashi out there. According to Rub the Rub the Rishash, places, the Rambam, the Rish, the Rambam. So there's nothing you can do about it. Ein Olah Kikos says that you cannot take me to the entire for it. You cannot force me to be master there. No, you cannot be involved with the mecca. Does that mean what I did was okay? That means it's mutter. I'm allowed to cheat you. Is that true? That Ein Olah Kikos means even the Isser Olah doesn't apply? What do we say? No. The Ein Olah Kikos means that Havzaras Olah doesn't apply. The Isser doesn't apply. It wasn't an Isser to be an honest somebody. No, a cheer guy. That's a shame. Yesh Lablok, Yesh Lachkon. What do we mean when we say Ein Olah Kikos? Okonah Miyadim Yisrael. Does that mean that it's not an Isser B'chwal? Or does that mean the Isser is the Mekoyle Evid? But the knas, so to speak, the consequences, the ramifications, post. The Havzaras Olah, the Beis Din Shamata, that doesn't apply to him.
If we say that there is no Isser, if we say there is an Isser to do this, then if you bought it for $100, you wouldn't be allowed to sell it for $102 and make $2 profit. That would be a not, even though it's
a... So there is a certain degree of what's called the market value. We're talking about Onoah. So Onoah means that it's above and beyond what's considered to be the normal range of a price. Prices fluctuate a little bit. If I go into if everyone in town is this land is worth $100, that's all it's going to be. Not a penny more than $100. And I go ahead And I tell you, yes, it's worth $100, that's cool.
Even though it's much less than a
shtetl. If I tell you, let's say I say to you, listen, I'm telling you, I bought the land for $100. This land sells for $100. But I'm in the business. I'm a real estate guy. I want to make some money off it. I'm telling you in advance, I'm making a $5 profit. That's okay. So notice when you misrepresent something, if I tell you the facts, then that's, I don't know.
Wouldn't you know it's the farm anyway?
Hold on. So comes the Marshal and says, like Daniel says, that no matter how you decide on this Chakir, this Shaila, even if you want to take this amazing approach that it's not called even an Israel law, that means it's not called the Israel law, it's Mamon. But Israel law is Devarim, it's called. What is the law? Devarim? That's a different person. The two parts of the Parashas Bahar. One is, if you sing Kurukon, the Gaha Altogrish is up there. Then there's another passage a few psalms later, below Sonovish is a Chivya Reisan Alakecha. You're not allowed to be Ma'an, you're not allowed to bother somebody. What does it mean, those Sonovish is up there? So the Gemara says in the fourth part, Vishas and the fourth part, then the fourth part of the Matiya, that the second part of the Sonovish is a Miso is talking about Onoz Devarim. It's not to bother people, it's not to check people, to annoy people, but that's an Isavir Reisan. Not in the realm of Mom, it's not to do with the same, not to do with cheating guys in business. Stop to drive a guy nuts, a guy upset, and say, this is the rise of Onoaz Devarim. So the Mishnah gives a few examples. The examples are not the only cases. There are examples of some common scenarios of Onoaz Devarim. So one Mishnah says, a person goes to a ger and he says to him, you used to be a guy, and now you're Jewish. You make fun of the person. So that's called not only the Issa Deraisa of Onoaz Devarim, that's the additional Issa Ma'anas Hager. There's this additional Issa the third Ma'an Hager. So let's say you go to Baal Shuva and you say, Zechor Masech HaRishon. You say to a guy, you used to be Michal Shabbos, you were never from. What do you think? You're sitting in Yeshiva now. Remember what it was like in the old days? You weren't such a good guy? That's Zechor Masech HaRishon, and that's the Issa Deraisa of Onoaz Devarim. Or the Gemara says, let's say you go into a store and you start looking around at an object and you have absolutely no intention of buying that object. Not even a half an inch of it, you know. And you're asking the guy the price, you're schmoozing with the guy, maybe we'll buy. And you know in your heart of hearts you don't plan on buying it, you're racing on. The Gemara says, Dover muscle elite lalay, that's what Issa Deraisa. Now, again, that depends on what the setup is. So, certain societies, so certain store owners would like to do that. Some places they want you to come in and look like you're interested, even though you're not interested, it's good for business. Because if they see a lot of people who are walking around, so that brings more customers in. But Liatsu, you live in a place where people don't like that. I don't want to be bothered. The guy sitting behind his desk, came to him, he's learning that behind me now. The guy comes in and starts hopping the chinik to look at his merchandise, and he has no intention of buying it. So that's on Oz Devarim. Or let's say the mission is another example. Let's say a person is suffering. So you become a big tzaddik and you say, oh, I'm telling you why you're suffering. You're suffering because you did this and this and there. You tell the guy, Yisurim are coming to you because you did such and such a thing. So that's also called a nose devarim. These are all examples of bothering people. Not only these examples. Anytime you do something that bothers somebody, that annoys somebody, just stop. To get on somebody's nerves, that's an issue of their eyes of a nose devarim. So comes the Marshal and says, even if you hold that this chiddush, that there's no nos mamon, a character of a garment, there's no issue of a nos devarim. A nos devarim there is. If I cheat a guy and I sell him a piece of land significantly off what the price is, so he's going to get upset about it. When he finds out, he's going to be really ticked off. So that's called a Noz Devarim. If I cause any aggravation to somebody, like you did, that's called a Noz Devarim. So the Marshal says, clearly I'm not putting this in a Noz Devarim. But we're not living a Noz Devarim right now, we're living a Noz Mammon. Is there an Isidir act of a Noz Mammon and Kafka? Then we say, in and out, crosses Mashkiya Yisir on Noz Mammon and Kafka.
What if he's not going to find out?
So it comes. Well, at the beginning of the fifth pack of Bava Metzia, and they shed some light on the shadow. Because the Gemara has a strange shadow. Fifth pack of we have three different parashas in the Torah about taking somebody else's money to listen to. One is the Pasha of Gezela, Eva slash Gezela, stealing outright stealing. One is Ono, cheat a guy, rip a guy off, and get some of his money. And the third is Ribis. That's got $100, I get that $120. So in each one of these three cases, I end up with somebody else's money, Shalaykin. Says the Gemara, Lavali the Kasa Rachamana Lav, the Ono, the Gezela of Ribis. Why did the Torah have to tell us all three of these cases? Couldn't I have figured it out on my own? If the Torah would have given us one of these parshas, or two of these parshas, I could have figured out the remaining ones. If I go through a whole shrichas of back and forth, no, the Torah would have said Gezel and Ribis, I wouldn't have known Ono. The Torah would have said Gezel and Ono, I wouldn't have known Ribis. It would have all kind of chesbainis, all kind of tefulim that wouldn't have been so easy to derive. Wouldn't have been able to necessarily derive the third from the other two. Whole complicated sigilim. Derech Agav, this entire sugya seems to be working with a very, very questionable premise about Ribis. The Gemara put Ribis into the parish of Gezel v'Ono. What's the fundamental difference between Ribis and contrast to Gezel v'Ono? Ribis, the guy knows about it. The guy, and he signed on his document. He accepted the credit card, the interest rates. So why is that Gezel v'Ono? It's so fundamentally different. Ramesh Pella got along the Gemara. It's a big problem. This Gemara is not a big problem. It's a parish that's varm in Ribis. That Ribis is not Gezela. Ribis has nothing to do with Gezela. Kilo Zechariah. What's the point if I take Ribis? Do I have to return it? So the machlokes amaroim whether I have to return it. What's the machlokes based on? So one amara says you don't have to return it. The other amara says you have to return it because as a pasuk in Chumash it says v'cheyachit v'machal tikach v'ita neshem v'sarvis v'yareisim v'kecha v'cheyachit v'machal pasuk v'pashas b'har. The Torah says don't take the Ribis. If you do, so let your brother live. What does it mean let your brother live? Give it back to him. According to one Amara means, after you took it, give it back. The other Amara says, no, don't take Ribis, but rather be a nice guy and lend him the money without the Ribis. Means, help him live, don't take the Ribis from him. And the other day says, no, don't take the Ribis, and if you took it, so then you better give it back. Why did one day in the Gemara says you don't have to return the Ribis? You have somebody else's money. Of course you have to return it. And why did the other Amira say that you need a posuk to tell me you have to return the Ribis? It's like, posuk, you have to return it. It's not your but it's Gezela. So what's the hanoch of that entire sugya? That's not Gezela. Because the other guy gave it to you. He gave it to you willingly. True, Bishas, Gevias HaRibis, he may have been, kicking and screaming, he didn't want to give it to you, but Tachas, he signed up the bottom line, he committed himself. He didn't want to give the Ribis, he shouldn't have signed it, he didn't borrow the money in the first place. So you see, part of the Gemara, that the premise of the sugya is, Ribis is not Gezela. Ribis is fundamentally not Gezela. And it's so fundamentally not Gezela, you don't even have to really return it, but not for the Gezela Saklasov. And that's what the Gemara says, what's the din? If a person takes Ribis, and then he dies, do the children have to return the Ribis? So the Gemara says, no. The children do not have to return the Ribis. What if a person steals something and he dies, do the children have to return the Gezela? Absolutely. Because it was not theirs. Of course, they have to return it. It's not yours and the new mom. You have to give it back. The Ribis, the Yarshim, the Yarish, the Ribis. It's their money. It's a mitzvah, the Chayach came up. That mitzvah, the Gemara was given to the Malveh. Wasn't given to the children. The person who still took the Ribis in the first place, he has a mitzvah, the Chayach came up. The children who never took the Ribis don't have that mitzvah. The Gemara just says, we should keep it on the aim. If it's clear, if everybody knows that it's Ribis, let's say I lent somebody in, Reuben lent Shimon $100. Says in besides $100, so give me back $100 plus a watch, and the watch is going to say on it, received as interest for the loan. So now the Yarshim is going to walk around wearing this watch that says Ribis all over it. That's going to be a big design to the parents. So therefore, they shouldn't keep it on the aim, you should return it. But Lule, that's about us, and you don't have to return it. So the whole anach of the entire sugan beginning with the practical Mitzia is that Ribis is not disabled. That's a type of very big pella. So why does the Gemara also seem to assume that Ribis is in the same parasha as Gezela and Ono? The whole point of back that sugan. So the Gemara has a shiloh. What did you offer the sugan for? The Gemara says, guess what? You really don't need offer. If you would have had the Chiddush HaTorah of Ribis and the Chiddush HaTorah of Ono, I would have figured out Gezela also. I could have figured out my own. If not Ribis, I have somebody else's property. If not Ono, I have somebody else's property, somebody else's money. And the Torah says, you're not allowed to do that. So I figured out. It's called a chayvin. I go ahead and I rob the guy, hold the guy up. So for sure, that's also. So in Rechinami, the posuk, the Isser of Losigzo, the superfluous in the Gemara. You know what I mean? I would have figured it out on my own, just based on the Isser of Ribis and the Isser of Ono. So Lamali, the Kasa, Bechamad, Olav, Losigzo. So why not have the Torah write the sigil if you don't need it? The Gemara says, "Mekevish tchar sofer b'diyo." So that the sigil was written. Kovesh chasocher means I don't pay a guy, don't pay a worker, guy works for me, I don't pay him. The Gemara says that's the issue of lo sigzol. So the Gemara says, but we know you have to pay a worker. The first says lo sasha socher nibiyabion. If the person holds back and doesn't pay a worker, that's also innocent in Torah. So the Gemara says lava lo b'shnei lavim. I didn't know that the whole purpose of lo sigzol was not to tell me this b'zayil. That I would have figured out on my own. The purpose of those sigils is to tell me that even if I don't actively steal, if I passively steal by not paying the worker, that's also called those sigils. I'm in violation of two isur, of those sashim as well as those sigils. Ad kan d'vei Gemara. So the nekuda that we have to extract from this Gemara is that the whole pasuk of sigil is unnecessary. It comes to us and says, no, wait a second. That's a kosher. That's a sense. Maybe those sigil is coming to tell me not to steal, coming to tell me not to pay, not to pay for it. Coming to tell me not to actively steal, but it's addressing a situation where Ono wouldn't have applied. So where would Ono not have applied? Karkos, avodim hukshu lekarkos. So what would be the din if I steal a guy's karka, or I steal a guy's evet kinani? So if the whole mokor for the Yisrael Gezeil would have been a yalfus, it would have been a comparison to Ono and Ribbis. So I would have said, hey, there's no Issa. There is no non karka. There's no non avadim. So there should be no Issa because there's no non karka avadim either. So maybe that's where the Torah of Tabit al-Sigzal. The Torah of Tabit al-Sigzal, even Bechir HaGavna, even in a situation where Onoah is not relevant, because they were still relevant. That's Tosis Kash. Tosis tries to work with the Kash. Again, we're not learning Bechir HaGavna right now, but that's the Kash of Tosis. So come back, I don't even say, Tosis just said Bechir HaGavna. Tosis just said that there's no law for Karkos. That's not a Chiddush, we know. That's a Mishnah in the fourth time of the Mitzvah. When you learn the fifth practice, you learn the fourth time. What did Tosis Mechadish do? Avadim we also know. But there's no Issa either. The Sugya in the fifth practice of the Mitzvah is not talking about the ramifications of stealing or the ramifications of another ramifications of Ribbit. The Gemara says, why do you need an Isser Gezeilah? The Torah is talking about the Isser of Gezeilah and the Isser of Ana and the Isser of Ribbis. And the Torah is saying that we could have theoretically derived the Isser of Gezeilah from the Isser of Ribbis and Ana. And Tosis throws down a penalty marker and says, oh, wait a second, it's not true. I would have given a hedge of things that it would have been a case where the Isser of Ana wouldn't have applied and the Isser of Gezeilah still does apply. So good, so that came with Kasha. Tosis, give it a test. Tosis is very nice. Tosis was meaniach something, a tremendous chiddush. Tosis was working with the premise that when we say in another kakos, it doesn't just mean there's no ramifications of Ono, it means there's no issur of Ono either, because that's what the sugya is talking about. The sugya is not talking about the zeros or no. The sugya is talking about the issur or no. So everyone saw that Tosis and Mamakamas? Put on Mamakamas. Everyone figured out that's what Tosis is saying? No one figured out. Anybody figured out? Say no. A little bit. You see, klar from Moses that ein ono lekarkos means there's no achzaras ono and there's no isra ono either. We'll have to see whether other rishonim agree with that or they disagree with that Moses. It's chumash for a minute, though. So we already know Avraham Avinu from West East Parashah and Avraham Avinu from Parashah Sayer as well. We see Avraham Avinu goes to many different scenarios and develops and unbelievable relationship and a vertical. Then all of a sudden, post the Akeda, that the vertical says to him, now I finally understand what you're all about. After Yadati, Yerel, Kimata. Now I see your Yerushalayim. Now I see it. There's all the Pashas left for Chah. Avraham was a wonderful person, but you didn't really see the need of Yerushalayim. All the Pashas Vayera, Avraham is doing wonderful things. Matnas Orchid, he has the Smilas. He's doing wonderful following things, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu still didn't give him the stamp of Yerushalayim. Only post the Akedah, that Ravina finally, Chazal say, Abba Mekuvah, and he reached the pinnacle of his Nisyanus. At that point, it becomes the label of the Yerushalayim. What's the Pshat? So the Nisyan of the Akedah was not just in the sense of quantitatively different than the other Nisyanis. It's not just that it was a harder Nisyan, but it was in a certain sense a fundamentally different type of Nisyan. Because it was a Nisyan that went against the grain of what Avraham Avinu was all about. So we know that the definition of Avraham Avinu is Midas HaChesed. Yemes Yachad Chesed Avraham. We know that Avraham Avinu was the personification of Tzedakah, of Mishpat, of the ultimate expression of Ben Adam, Lachavero. And we know that Avraham Avinu was called upon to do something which was the antithesis of Ben Adam Lachavero. He's called upon by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do nothing short of Lo Tzirtzo. He's called upon to exhibit the Midas Achzarius Shebi Yosef, the most possible act of non-mercy to one's own child. That's what we have to do. That's the Nisayon. The Nisayon is the exact opposite of everything that Avraham Avinu was. By overcoming his personal midas, by being able to go ahead and stand with a knife and be able to shech the son, so it's at that point that all the chesed of Avraham Avinu is put into the proper perspective. We know that there are different people who do chesed for different reasons. People do chesed because it feels good, people do chesed because somehow they feel that's a good thing for society. And those are all wonderful, and halavai people should do chesed for that. But then there's the highest level of chesed, the chesed of a person who's doing chesed as part of his avodas Hashem. That mahu gemel chesed, avatar gemel chesed. You become, take on the characteristics of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, you emulate a Kaddish Baruch Hu, that's the highest level of chesed. So comes a Kaddish Baruch Hu, Avraham Avinu, and says, everything you've been doing till now, everything you've been doing has been valid and it's wonderful. But that may have been stemming from, you're just a nice guy. You have a pleasant personality. You're a friendly person. You're an outgoing person. You like to help people. And that's wonderful. But Avraham Avinu, you just proved to the world that kirei elekimato. That everything, all your ma'alos ta'ivah, stem from ultimately your relationship with that Kodesh Baruch Hu, that you're yirei shemayim, and haraya, when you were called to the ultimate task of doing an absolute antithesis to that success, because that's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu told you to do, so you were able to do it. You were just about able to do it. That's megala to me, that you're yirei lekim, and that puts everything into a different perspective. So now, only at the point when you demonstrated that your Midas HaChesed stems from your Avodas Hashem, then and only then can we give you a stamp of not just an Isha Chesed, but at this point we can now say that you're Yireh Elokim as well. So that was the Ma'ala of the Akedah, that everything that Avraham Avinu stood for the last 100 or so years was finally put into the proper perspective of being in the realm of Yireh Elokim.
Is that the regular?